This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I would like to talk about the relationship between placental biology and cancer malignancy. But before we get into the science, I like to place my disclosures. I'm the chief science officer of a startup company called Oncobaria, and I'm also listed as a co-inventor in a pending patent application by Yale University. Now, cancer is a disease that affects all multicellular organisms, animals, including plants, and so on. And if you look at cancer mortality, there are actually quite substantial differences in the vulnerability of different species to cancer mortality. And here you see the results of a recent study looking at as many mammalian species the authors could get their hands on. And what you see here in these tick marks are incidences of cancer malignancy and cancer death in carnivores, in primates, including humans, rodents, and artiodactyls. And what you see here is, in particular, the artiodactyls are very low in their cancer vulnerability, while, you know, primates like ourselves, as well as carnivores, have a much higher rate of cancer mortality. So we have to realize, though, that low cancer mortality doesn't mean low tumor load. So here you have an example of an Indian cow that is carrying about 2 kilogram melanocytoma on its neck. And this is quite a large tumor. And usually no human would survive growth of a tumor of that size, as you can see here on the right side. You know, a depth of a melanocytoma of more than 4 millimeters would reduce your survival rate of to less than 50%. In contrast, the cow is a quite happy animal, as far as we can tell, except that the tumor is pulling down its ears here. But otherwise, the cow is healthy and is living a good life. Now, that is not limited to cows. There is also a famous case in horses. For instance, the Lipizzaner stallions that are the mainstay of the Spanische Hofreitschule in Vienna. And they are known to develop melanocytomic lesions. And about 50% of the animals, you can see some here, but they very rarely die from that disease. So how do we understand the discrepancy between tumor load and mortality rate? In order to understand this, we have to realize that cancer is a multi-stage process. The first step is when healthy tissue turns into a primary tumor, a process that we call tumorigenesis. And then eventually the primary tumor can break out of its primary tumor niche. It's called malignancy. And then when that happened, the cancer cells can travel to other parts of the body and establish secondary tumors, then, which are actually those that cause mortality in the end. Each stage of this process has its own biology. So the transition of healthy tissue into primary tumor is mostly caused by ontogenic mutations, if this is at least true for mammals. In birds, it's different. It's viruses there mostly. The malignancy is a process where the cells grow out of their tumor niche and invade the surrounding tissue. And then in metastasis is the establishment of a secondary tumor niche in another part of the tumor, so they have of the body, and they have to travel through either the lymph system or the blood vascular system to another place and be able to establish themselves there. Now, it is clear that, you know, since cancer is a multi-stage process, differences in cancer mortality rate can arise in any of those major transitions from tumorigenesis, malignancy, or metastasis. So cancer mortality, as it is measured in this particular report, are hard to interpret because it confounds tumorigenesis, malignancy, and metastasis rate. In this talk, I want to focus on and critical step, namely then rate of malignancies, how much species differ in their ability to either resist or not resist the transition from primary tumors to a malignant tumor. Now, we already had the cow as an example of an animal that is resistant to metastasis, to malignancy. And what is also special about cows and related animals is that they have a non-invasive placenta. So, as you see, a postpartum placenta of a cow. And here in the scheme, you can see that the fetal and the maternal tissue is neatly separated by two layers of epithelial cells. In contrast, humans, of course, cancer is a major health concern and a major cause of death. And we are also having a quite different form of placenta, namely a particularly invasive form of placenta, as you can see here on the right. So the upper part here is the fetal side with the umbilical cord coming in and bringing the fetal blood vessels. On this side is the uterus with the endometrium. And what you can see here schematically is that the space between the placenta and the mother is actually a compartment filled with maternal blood, where maternal blood is spilling from the spiral arteries into a cavity that is directly in contact with the placenta. Of course, the question is what determines the depth of placental invasion. There are two possibilities. It can be the placenta, or if you want, the fetus. Are those differences in invasiveness in how aggressive the fetus can invade the maternal tissue? Or is it the uterine lining, the mother particularly? And maybe it's differences in the invasibility, or say more positively, in the resistance the mother can mount against invasion. There's a classical study from 1971, which unfortunately has not been repeated. I would like to repeat it if I get a chance to do it. That is an interesting study with pigs. They are also relatives of cows and have a non-invasive placenta, as you can see in this little diagram here. And what these investigators did, they took pig embryos and inserted them in other parts of the body of the sow, and observed that actually, while in the uterus the embryo is non-invasive, in any other part of the body the fetus is invasive. And the authors conclude that the evidence is of an inherent invasive property of the trophoblast, and which shows that the normal development in the uterus is regulated by the uterine environment, meaning that the uterine environment, the mother is keeping the fetus from invading, even though in other contexts, in other parts of the body, the embryo can invade into the surrounding tissue. So the answer to this question is it is the uterine lining, the endometrium, or the mother that determines the degree of invasiveness by preventing the placenta to invade its tissue. So that means that when we turn back to cancer, we have to realize that also a malignancy is an interaction between one type of cell, namely the tumor cells, and the surrounding stroma cells, so the connective tissue surrounding the tumor. And it's quite similar to, in a way, that the tumor is similar to the placenta with its invasive capabilities, and the surrounding stroma that is interacting with these invasive forms. So the question then arises, can the stroma, the connective tissue around the tumor, prevent the malignancy in the cow as we have seen it here? Now, to test this idea, I was signing up with my friends and colleagues at the Yale Systems Biology Institute, where my lab used to be located. And Andrew Levchenko is the director of this institute, and he and I started collaborating. And Kshitits from his lab, a postdoc, did the actual experimental work. Kshitits is now a professor at the University of Connecticut. So what did they do? Both Andrei Levchenko and Chitits are both biomedical engineers, and what they did is they produced nanostructured slides that are just of the right size with little ridges so that they simulate the presence of collagen fibrils. And it is along collagen fibrils that migrating cells like to travel. So that means that with this arrangement, cells only travel in one direction, and that makes quantification of rate of travel relatively accurate. So, but then we're putting trophoblast cells or cancer cells, marked them with a vital dye, and planted them next to another cell population, fibroblasts, and we observed how these invasive cells invaded the lawn of fibroblasts. So here you have an example. This is an experiment where we had cow trophoblasts. These are the green cells here, planted next to human endometrial cells, human uterine cells. And if I can start this video here, you can see that the cow trophoblast cells readily invade the territory of the human endometrial cells. Now, if we go to another experiment, now this is again cow trophoblast cells. The green cells are the cow cells, but now confronted with cow endometrial cells that are not visible here because they are not labeled. And let's see what's happening then. So you see the cells still try to invade, but they don't get very far because the cow endometrial cells are actually preventing the movement of the trophoblast cells, the placental cells, into their territory. We can quantify this and do this in all kinds of combinations. And here you see extent of invasion of the y-axis and different setups here. The pink or, purple dots here of a human endometrial cells, the blue ones for the bovine or cow endometrial stromal cells. And we used human trophoblast cell lines, BEVO cells, and HDR4s, as well as cow trophoblast cells. And you can see in all comparisons, the cow cells are much more resistant to the invasion of these trophoblast cells. We can do a similar experiment, but this time not with uterine cells, but with cancer cells and skin fibroblasts. So the fibroblasts that are in under your skin and are also responsible for dealing with skin cancer. And here you also see so the dark the black one are the human skin fibroblasts, and the gray are the cow fibroblasts. And even the cow skin fibroblasts are much more resistant to the invasion of various cancer cell lines, in this case, melanoma cell lines, than the humans. So we have the parallel between the resistance of cow uterine cells against trophoblast invasion, and at the same time, cow skin fibroblasts are more resistant to the invasion by cancers. And what is even more interesting is that if we take human cells and change their gene expression pattern to make them more cow-like, so we tested a number of genes that were higher expressed in cow cells and then decreased the gene expression level in the human cells. And you can see that in about 50% of cases, the human cells became more resistant to the invasion of either trophoblast cells or cancer cells. So down here it is for skin cells, and this is for uterine cells. So the knockdown of genes expressed of that are less in the cow. So what do we have so far? We have seen that species difference in cancer and tumor cell invasion. And in part, that is explained by differences in the resistance of the associated stroma cells, as we say, or connective tissue cells. So, invasion of trophoblast cells into the endometrium and invasion of cancer cells into the skin fibroblasts are equally affected by the species from which these fibroblasts are coming from. Cow fibroblasts are stronger in resisting invasion than the human fibroblast. Human fibroblasts, however, can be made resistant to invasion by manipulating the gene expression. So how wise should this be the case? So you can imagine that species like the humans, where the uterus is permissive for placental invasion, and skin is also permissive to cancer invasion. If there's an evolutionary change, selection, that makes the uterus more resistant to placental invasion, that has a secondary effect or a correlated effect on the cells in the skin and causes the resistance to cancer invasion. Now, that is a nice story, but do we have any experimental evidence that such a thing can happen? So we did this in an experiment with mouse lines that were selected for a change in gene expression in the skin. I don't have the time to tell you exactly how that was made, but you can read it in the paper. Then we asked, you know, we know that the skin has changed its gene expression under some selection regime. Has this also consequences for the gene expression in the endometrium, in the uterus? And this is the paper that we published this in. And here you see all our samples and similarities. And here's the main result. So the top diagram here, on the x-axis, we arrange different genes that are expressed in the skin fibroblasts. And on the y-axis is the difference in gene expression between the evolved, the selected line, and the wild-type animals. And so this is the difference in gene expression between evolved and wild-type. And here the genes are arranged according to the size of the change in gene expression due to the selection. Now, on the lower diagram, you see the genes also arranged in the same way as in the upper diagram. And now on the y-axis, we have the change in gene expression between evolved and non-evolved animals. And you can see that, you know, of course, it's not totally parallel, but also that genes that had a large change in the skin in terms of the gene expression also tend to have a different gene expression in the uterus. It's of course not every gene is affected, and not all of them in the same direction, but predominantly gene expression changes in the uterus go in the same direction as in the skin. You can calculate the correlation here. And what that means is that selection in one cell type, in this particular experiment, skin fibroblasts, has correlated gene expression effects in the other cell type, in this case, the fibroblasts in the uterus. So what we have here is fibroblasts account for human cow differences in resistance to invasion by placenta and cancer cells. Changing gene expression in human fibroblasts can make them more resistant to cancer invasion. That, of course, has translational implications. Maybe that can be used eventually in the clinic. And the gene expression evolution in one cell type, for instance, the skin fibroblasts, and in the endometrial fibroblast is correlated. So it is plausible, based on these experiments and also mechanistic considerations, that the evolution of invasion resistance in the uterus can lead to higher resistance against cancer malignancy. Now, so of course, the next big question is, can we use this basic biological insight to devise ways to decrease human malignancy rates? And this is what my friends and I are trying to do in this company, Oncoberia, where Kshitij is the CEO, and Yasir, a former postdoc, is also one who has contributed greatly to this research. And with that, I thank you for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.